You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the Civic Media Spotlight. To kick off the first hour, we have Civic Media Mornings with Jamie Martinson and Brian Noonan. John Parker, a Minneapolis radio host on AM 950 KNTF, to report and comment on the recent Minneapolis ICE shooting.
Civic Media Mornings, thank you so much for joining us. Whether you are listening today right here in Madison on WMDX or maybe down in Richland Center on WRCE, we are definitely glad that you are here. And Brian Noonan is my co-host, and we were talking a little bit off the air about the fact that today's news just feels heavy, doesn't it? It just feels like there's a weight today.
Everybody is getting used to it. Some days you can find some distractions, a lot of distractions if you're a football fan in Wisconsin or Illinois for the next few days. So that's nice. If you're a Minnesota football fan, you don't have that distraction, unfortunately. So if you're in the Minneapolis or St. Paul or anywhere up there, you're being bombarded with yet another just piece of horrible, horrible news.
Yeah, and before we jump into that and our next guest, we do want to thank Professor John Hall for joining us this morning from UW-Madison. And over on our socials, Alicia had a comment saying that as a veteran, she will say the part about being obligated to not follow illegal orders was drilled into their heads all the way down as lowest enlisted. It's part of duty and part of the law. And I wanted to read her comment because I thought that was a nice end to what the professor had talked about. Unfortunately, we don't get to talk about anything as maybe lighthearted today. And to help us kind of parse out what's happening in Minneapolis, we're joined by John Parker. He is a Minneapolis radio host on AM 950 KTNF, a Minneapolis resident as well. And so good morning, John. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So what do we know so far? I mean, we know what happened yesterday. You can refresh people's mind on that. Have there been any developments overnight?
Right. So yesterday, an ICE agent murdered Renee Nicole Good, a 37-year-old mother and Minneapolis resident, near her home, actually. And the incident took place just a few blocks away from the George Floyd Square Memorial. As of 7 a.m. this morning, we don't know yet who the identity is of the agent who killed her. Neither do we know his status, whether he's on leave, paid administrative leave, or if he's been let go, fired from ICE. We're actually kind of don't know where he is, if he's currently in the state or not. We do know that the FBI is continuing their investigation, as is the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And notably, that Bureau, along with our Attorney General, Keith Ellison, they were the ones that successfully investigated and convicted, got a conviction of Derek Chauvin, the officer who murdered George Floyd. So some folks are feeling optimistic that, you know, we are a state, Minnesota, that has investigated, has used video to prosecute effectively, to hold officers accountable. So I know we are less than 24 hours into that, but we'll see what happens with their investigation. Also, the Hennepin County attorney, Mary Moriarty, she is also pushing for a local investigation at the county level as well. So we know that there are at least two investigations, possibly a third, that are going to get started. May I share a little bit about Renee, though? Because I think it's important
please,
to
please.
Remember
because
her.
there have been conflicting reports if Renee was a citizen, if she wasn't. Either way, inexcusable, the action of this ICE thug. But yes, please share with us.
So she was a U.S. citizen. She was a 37-year-old mother of three. She graduated actually from Old Dominion University in Virginia with a degree in English. So she was a poet. She actually won an undergraduate prize from the Academy of American Poets for her poetry. She had just moved to Minneapolis. On Instagram, she described herself as a poet and writer and wife and mom. She was originally from Colorado Springs, where she hosted a podcast with her second husband. They had a son together, and he tragically passed away in 2023. That son is now only 6 years old. Yesterday was her older sister's birthday. And she was a member of the LGBTQ community living in Minneapolis, having just moved here with her wife. And so she actually lived nearby where she lost her life. And at the vigils last night, a lot of people didn't even realize they were walking past her home when they were going to honor and remember her. So that's just a little bit of what we know about Nicole as of this morning.
Well, we appreciate that background. And we want to get a feeling for what's happening in Minneapolis, simply because over the past few years, and you mentioned the George Floyd Memorial, this took place just a few blocks away. We watched the murder of George Floyd. We watched what happened with the murder of Melissa Hortman and her husband. So we want to get a feel for what's happening in Minneapolis from you. But before that, we got to hear this audio, I think, because the recollection of our Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem and the recollection and what Jacob Frey, mayor of Minneapolis, had to say yesterday are very striking. So can we start out with cut four and then let's just go right into cut five, Parker?
We collectively are going to do everything possible to get to the bottom of this, to get justice, and to make sure that there is an investigation that is conducted in full. But what we do know is that a 37-year-old woman is dead and that she was shot by ICE. They are already trying to spin this as an action of self-defense. Having seen the video of myself, I want to tell everybody directly, that is bull. There's little I can say, again, that'll make this situation better, but I do have a message for our community, for our city, and I have a message for ICE. To ICE, get the out of Minneapolis.
It was an act of domestic terrorism. An officer of ours acted quickly and defensively, shot to protect himself and the people around him. And my understanding is that she was hit and is deceased.
They went very quickly, John. We're joined by John Parker, radio host on AM 950 KTNF in Minneapolis. Boy, they jumped on this to try to create that domestic terrorist narrative in less than an hour. Mm-hmm. It bothers me, and it's got to infuriate the people of Minnesota. But I think it's starting to get to spread across where we are able to see the video. We saw the George Floyd video. We saw the murder of Renee Nicole Good. We saw the January 6th video. And yet the administration is still trying to tell us, no, you don't know what you're looking at. What's the vibe on that particular move that they're trying to do, the gaslighting of not only the country, but of Minneapolis in particular on another case?
So just this week, DHS deployed 2,000 agents to the city in what they're calling the largest current deployment of ICE agents in the country. And right now, I mean, literally as we're on the air, there is a protest headed to the Bishop Henry Whipple Federal Building, which is where ICE is headquartered and where they do their hearings. And so that is happening right now. We're trying to keep tabs on what's going to happen there. There is another demonstration that is planned for this evening at Lake Street and Chicago Avenue. And we've been getting reports that there are other protests that are going to be happening throughout the Twin Cities. And I imagine that they're going to continue to ramp up because we know how to protest here in the Twin Cities. And a lot of people have been seeing the video and just watching local news reports this morning as people were gathering for this morning's march. It is a very wide, the demographics of the folks that are there are very wide and various. And I think that's speaking and telling to how Minnesotans are thinking about this right now, that they don't want ICE to be here. And Minneapolis public schools actually are closed because while we were focused yesterday on ICE murdering this 37-year-old mother, they were also on Roosevelt High School campus where they were attacking people. They were shoving staff to the ground. They were chasing after kids. There was a safety issue. We had kids hiding out and on lockdown in a library. And so it really does feel like the violence is the point of what they're doing. And Minneapolitans, if you will, Twin Cities residents, Minnesotans are not going to put up with this. And I think that we will see as much organized action as we saw in Chicago last summer when the National Guard was deployed to your city, Brian.
Are they kind of, are they hoping that you, all Minnesotans do come out and do these rallies? Because then they can cut the footage and it feeds into, this is why we're here, because Minneapolis is a lawless city. Look at all these people on the streets. Even though the protests will probably, hopefully, be nonviolent and legal, and that is our right to protest the government, which I'm 100% behind. But it's like a double-edged sword where you go, yes, we need to be out and protest, knowing that, oh, they're going to use this against us to gin up their cause and do more gaslighting.
I think that as we've seen their response to the video, which any rational person that looks at that says that she was not a domestic terrorist. She was not trying to run these agents down. I think they're going to do that regardless. This is a very True. Sophisticated propaganda Yeah. machine where they, and actually it's interesting with this video, they're not even trying to splice it and edit it in a way that favors their narrative. They're literally just telling you, don't believe what you're seeing.
Right.
Right.
And that is so, I mean, it's next level for them. You know, I think that they're very good at, you know, either not showing the video or videos and just letting their talking heads spin it the way that they want to spin it, or they edit things very selectively, mm-hmm. Brian, to what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I think now they're just, it's to a level of, they're just going to lie brazenly and they don't care. And they're going to do it anyway. And so I don't think that that should stop us from collectively getting out there.
No, I don't think it should stop you either.
But the lying has been the pattern of basically trying to tell us what we saw is not reality. Right. And it happened in Chicago with the Midway Blitz. You alluded to that. It happened even in Washington, D.C. with the gentleman who chucked a Subway sandwich at an ICE agent. And all mm-hmm. charges ended up being dropped against those individuals because what we were seeing was the truth. And there were actually no charges. In a city like Minneapolis, I kind of want your take on this, John, where, you know, the law enforcement has been an issue. It's been at the crux of all of these protests. Does something like this further erode the communities, the states, the citizens' trust in law enforcement throughout Minneapolis?
I will say that after George Floyd's murder, the Department of Justice did a pretty top-down investigation of the Minneapolis Police Department. And as part of that, there was and I'm blinking on the very technical title of it, but sure. there was an agreement between the Minneapolis Police Department and the DOJ of reforms that were going to happen and had to happen per this agreement that they settled with the DOJ. The minute that the Trump administration came in there, they nixed that. They cut it up. They said, nope, we're not going to do this anymore. The city of Minneapolis and the leadership of MPD, to their credit, said that they were going to continue to abide by the terms of that agreement, even though it was no longer going to be enforced by the Trump administration. I will also say that while the Minneapolis police chief yesterday, Brian O'Hara, was pretty forceful in his comments towards reality, which is what we all saw mm-hmm. yesterday, the Minneapolis Police Union was siding with the Trump administration. And the police union has been, and I always find myself in this weird, bizarre situation where as a former union person,
yeah.
I support unions, but that union has been very pushing back against the situation.
Listen to Civic Media Mornings, weekdays, 6 to 8, on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Minneapolis radio host on AM 950 KTNF.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Up next on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the WXCO Morning Report with Chad Holmes. In this report, Chad speaks with Milwaukee County exec David Crowley.
And welcome back. It is the Chad Holmes Show on 98.9 WXCO. I am Chad Holmes, and this morning I'm actually being joined here in studio by our WXCO news reporter, Isabella Nieto. Isabella, welcome into the studio. You're usually off working, covering all those news stories. Glad to have you here in the studio for our interview.
Thanks, Chad. Happy to be here.
And also across the table, we're very happy to welcome one of the Democratic candidates for governor of the state of Wisconsin here in 2026, the Milwaukee County Executive, David Crowleyan. Mr. Crowley, thank you for coming in here into studio in downtown Wausau.
Absolutely. Glad to be here in Wausau. Thank you for having me, as always.
As I mentioned to you when he came in, this is the second time I had a chance to talk to you. I said the day before President Biden left the race, we had you on. I thought you were outstanding that day. Really were able to talk about the issues involving that race. And I'm very curious to hear some of the issues about your race now for governor. Yes. And again, really glad to have you here this morning. Let's start off again. Okay. The generic question that you always have to ask, why are you running for governor? And I'll add to that, why are you running for governor now in 2026?
Well, first and foremost, I'm the only candidate that not only served in the legislature, but actually have experience running government. I've had to balance billion-dollar budgets and actually had to tackle many of the toughest issues head on. And we've been able to build affordable housing for seniors, for working families, for people with disabilities. We've been able to implement our no-wrong-door model of care and making sure that no one falls through the cracks, and that has helped us to reduce our overdose deaths by 30%. But we've also been able to reduce the amount of people going to our emergency rooms and in our jails. And I think that this is a great opportunity for us to focus on a real vision, putting something on the table for Wisconsinites. And I think Democrats, many of us have been, you know, frustrated not only with who's occupying the White House, but quite frankly, personally, I'm also frustrated with Democrats, the fact that we haven't put a real agenda, a real vision on the table that brings lost voices like young people and independents back into the fold, and really focusing on how do we make sure that when the tide rises, all the boats rise in every community in Wisconsin.
You mentioned the work that you've been doing as Milwaukee County Executive, and I imagine a lot of folks that you talk to here in central Wisconsin, maybe the northern part of the state, not aware of the role that the county executive in Milwaukee has. I guess I'm going to ask you a little bit about the job itself. Some of the positions in government are more powerful than others, more opportunities to do a lot of good.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about that position and maybe as well try to connect it with being a governor? How would it compare in terms of being an executive for the most populous county in the state of Wisconsin and to move to Madison and be a governor for the entire state?
Well, as county executive, I am the executive. I'm like the governor of Milwaukee County. I represent 19 different cities and villages. They all have their unique personalities and all have their unique needs. I represent a million people, which is close to a sixth of the entire state's population. And so the things that we've been able to tackle, they cut across geographical lines, and quite frankly, they cut across partisanship. And within Milwaukee County, I control close to a $2 billion budget. We are responsible for not only the public safety needs when it comes down to the courthouse and the jail or community reintegration center or juvenile justice. We also provide programs and support for our seniors, for young people, with people with disabilities. And we provide all the mental health care. And we've been able to kind of transform and improve the models that we've been able to implement. But we also have our county transit system and our parks, some of our most used amenities that people care about. These are all the things, whether you're Democrat or Republican, these aren't partisan issues. These are issues that matter to every Wisconsinite. And I think that, you know, I'm in a similar position that a former governor that we had, Governor Scott Walker, was in before he became governor of Wisconsin. We're definitely two different people. I want to put that out there. But I will say that being county executive is truly the training grounds when you think about being able to take the next step, governing an entire state and making sure that no community is left behind. Because as the county executive, I've had to tackle, you know, issues like public safety, public health. But I've also had to be there in modes of crisis and really talk to the community members that I represent, letting them know that I'm going to be there for them and make sure that they're not left behind.
Isabella, I'll let you talk.
So you have this, you know, some of these big city experiences. You mentioned your time in the state legislature and in Milwaukee. Can you tell me a little bit about how you are planning to appeal to more rural voters that might be wary of somebody with only, you know, major city experience? How are you working to appeal to rural voters?
Well, first, I'm a true Wisconsinite. And so, born in Milwaukee, but I've never just spent all my time in Milwaukee. You know, my father was a retired master electrician, and my grandfather traveled all across this state because they love the recreational activities that Wisconsin provides. So I've been all up and down Lake Michigan for some fishing, but also, you know, going to places all over the state as well to do some duck hunting. But I will also say that, you know, when I was first elected to the state legislature in 2016, I'm one of the very few legislators in Wisconsin's history that had to share an office. Hmm. And one of those individuals that I shared an office with was Don Vruwink, who we both came in together. But he represented smaller municipalities, small town rural Wisconsin through and through. But by sharing that office, it gave me an opportunity to learn a little bit more about rural life, what's going on with our agricultural industry, what some of our family farms are going through, but also how we can improve the recreational outdoor activity that we have all across the state. And so I want folks to know I'm going to be a governor for all of us. And my job is to go across and not only just talk about the things that I think is important, but it's important to listen. And I think folks want a governor who not only understands what the struggle looks like, but that's going to listen and make sure that those who are directly impacted by the issues also have a voice to lend to the solutions.
Again, we are talking to David Crowley, the Milwaukee County executive and candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor in the state of Wisconsin. We have to take a time out. We're going to have an information update here at the bottom of the hour and then come back with more of our discussion. Isabella Nieto and myself yesterday afternoon had a chance to talk here in studio to David Crowley. That's coming up as we continue here on our first day back. It is currently 28 degrees under overcast skies here in downtown Wausau. The time is 8:29. It is the Chad Holmes Show on 98.9 WXCO.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Up next on the Civic Media Spotlight, we are spotlighting Busted Pencils, a podcast on civic media. John Lupinacci, Tim Slecker, and producer Jacob explain what emergency licenses are, when they are or aren't appropriate, and the problem with them being used to the degree they are now.
Woo-hoo. Or should I say, me? No, I won't. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education 2026. Class is in session. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, me, Tim Slecker, we're here. Well, it's Doctors Tim and Doctors Johnny. And the me, we'll get into it one of these days, but Johnny needs some vocal training. And so I was just showing him, you know, when I used to work at a summer camp, the music people, I don't want to say the music nerds because people make fun of the music, but I'd always hear the vocal training outside my cabin, and they'd da da na 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 me, just all morning long.
Oh,
and so,
and they're all podcast hosts now.
Yeah,
so it just goes to show you.
Oh, anyway, we'll get into it, but you know, it is 2026. All kinds of stuff going on. In case anyone hasn't been paying attention to anything, Maduro said, "I didn't do it." So there you go, Johnny. You got to throw a little bit of current events in there. But yeah, Maduro said he didn't do it. And Trump said, well, too bad, other countries, we're coming after you next. A whole lot going on there. I think this is one of the things that we want to talk about in the future too, America's premise. But, you know, one of the biggest kind of pet peeves that I've had for Johnny, you point out it's been a long time, but Jacob, you sent us this great article from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Why, and, yes, I did.
And again, reminder for listeners out there, from 2013 to 2020, I myself was a Wisconsin, Madison area resident, dean of the School of Education at Edgewood College. And I actually was on Wisconsin Public Radio quite a few times, and I got to talk about this, and in fact talked about this issue. Headline: more Wisconsin teachers hold emergency licenses. And in the subtitle, DPI, that would be the Department of Public Instruction, issued about 4,000 emergency licenses in the 2023-24 school year, up 20% from 2022. And I'm going to just leave it there and see what Drs. Johnny and Chairman of the Board Jacob make of this article before I launch.
Can I ask a chairman question real quick before we get into it? Because I am, everybody knows this. I've been on the show for about 9 months now, and I've learned a lot about education, but I'm still a novice on some of these, these technical matters. Now, emergency teaching license certainly sounds like it means something to me. But can you tell me specifically what actually is an emergency teaching license? Do you need any sort of teaching experience to hop in and get one of these? Is there any qualification, or is it basically we got to fill these seats with people to come in here and hang out with these kids and keep them busy? I mean, what is an emergency teaching license?
Well, before I jump in, Johnny, you take a stab at it. What do you think?
Well, yeah, Jacob, that's a good question. And Tim, I actually am going to defer to you. I'll take a stab at this, but I'm going to defer to you. Like, we're going to play some, volleyball, and we're going to send the ball back over the net to Tim in just a second here, because you are really close in your research on, like, teacher labor, and, you've called it for years the teacher exodus, and you've championed on Busted Pencils and in other outlets of, sharing your work that, we don't have a teacher shortage, yet we say there's a shortage of teachers. We do not in this country have a shortage of highly qualified people who are licensed and certified to teach. We just have a really bad record of retaining those highly qualified people in the profession. And Tim, you could speak to that. You've called it the teacher exodus for years and sort of have battled back at, media's depiction of the teacher shortage. But Jacob, your question is important because it's real and it's on the ground. We can get into the weeds on why there's a shortage of teachers, or why there's an, as Tim calls it, the teacher exodus. That's not new, but certainly still going. As we all know, it is not gotten any easier to be a teacher in 2026. It's only been a week, right? We're just getting back into class, but yet we know post-COVID things have been harder for teachers than maybe ever arguably in the profession. And that's coming, right from the classrooms of veteran teachers, of really great teachers, of new teachers, of principals, of school leaders. It has always been difficult to be a teacher, but it has only gotten harder. And we've put more demands on our teachers than ever. So we'll come back to that. But Jacob actually asked, what is an emergency teacher's license? And Tim said, I'll ask Johnny to answer.
Well, I just wanted you to throw it.
Johnny's going
to
talk a lot about it, but in short, right? It's basically like a driver's permit, Jacob. You're allowed to teach because you can't just have anybody walk into our public schools anywhere in the state, in our states, in the U.S. and teach. There's varying levels of what's required to be a licensed teacher state to state. Remember, a little lesson here in class and session, education is a state right. So this is under the Office of Superintendents in each state. So it's state determined. But in a sense, Jacob, you get a permit which allows for you to teach in public schools. And it's issued typically by the State Department, right? And usually, and this is where Tim's going to get into some of the weeds here for us, but usually, Jacob, there are some requirements. There's usually some stipulations, and it's usually that you need at least a bachelor's degree, and sometimes you need a few formal teaching qualifications that are like a little short of the standard state licensure, right? But usually involves some kind of enrollment or plan to be in an alternative certification program, right? or in some special district need area. Maybe, for example, you were an engineer for years and you're going to, you know, teach math or science or computer programming in a public school that has a high need. There's a shortage for that. They need someone to teach the class. You have the skill, the degree area, and you have some, this is where it gets gray, you have some kind of qualification. Maybe you've led, you know, youth internship programs or something. Ideally, you have some connection to education and a plan to become a licensed teacher. That's in best case scenarios. Now, Jacob, before I pass it back over to Tim, this is class in session, right? The other thing to note here is that in some states, it's easier to get your teacher's license than it is your driver's license. So this is state to state. Ideally, highly qualified teachers in a great state like Wisconsin or Minnesota, you're listening in, or Michigan, you're in our listener base, or anywhere in our country. Most states with highly qualified teachers, right, have a whole degree program and accreditation that that those teachers go through. So there's usually programming in place. But this is essentially, you know, like a temporary business license or, you know, a driver's permit. You can be in the classroom. You pass, you know, you clear security clearances. You know, you've fingerprinted. You're okay in that realm. You've done some basic HR stuff. You have not been certified to be a licensed teacher, but you know what to do. And apparently, at least people around you, principals, superintendents, and other teachers say, this would be a great person to add to our school, have teaching our kids. That's best case scenario. So Jacob, that's a little bit about, that's the long version of what it means. I have no idea what Tim's doing. He's taking his pulse. He's grumbling over there about something. That's your qualifications,
Johnny.
Oh, the pulse. I'm like, is this a cue we didn't talk about? Like, we're supposed to know these hand gestures. I'm going to pass it back to you, Jacob and Tim, though, because Tim certainly knows firsthand about this really, really good information.
All right, Jacob, you want to add a little bit more or a little bit more?
I do, Tim, because what I'm hearing, I think I'm getting it. Basically, it's a waiving of some of the standard requirements for teachers. And depending on the state, if you're in a state, let's say I'm making it up, but let's say Connecticut has really high standards. If you get an emergency teaching license in Connecticut, it may mean you're totally qualified in Kentucky or a different state. You're just not quite at the standard of whatever. And it really depends on the state to tell you how good an emergency teacher could be. Was Johnny's description correct, Tim? I know Johnny and I study other areas of research.
It's a mess. Let me just say, actually, what this article points out is that Johnny Lupinacci is wrong. It is easier now than ever to, quote, become a teacher every single day since this, quote, shortage has been proclaimed. The qualifications required, they've actually been dumbed down, dropped down. And again, it depends on states, right? In my old state in Ohio right now, emergency licenses are high school graduates. You know, there's the standard. So Johnny's absolutely right. States all have their own individual ways of laying out who it is, the qualifications needed, and the type of whether you can work in an elementary setting, whether you can work in a, you know, in a secondary setting. But in Wisconsin specifically, just to point out, let's be factual, you have tier one and tier two licenses, all right? Mm. And the tier two license is, well, that's actually a teaching license. The tier one license is the, you're not a teacher, but state law requires that public schools only hire teachers. So we're going to circumvent the law by creating another class of teachers called tier one teachers, of which your qualification is that you have a bachelor's degree. And so you can see what I'm pointing out here is that you're actually not a teacher. You are proclaimed a teacher by state, you know, legislative maneuvering back and forth. In other words, because we have a teacher shortage, and when it comes to reporting such things as how many, quote, teachers do you have working in your district, one of the things Wisconsin has always been wonderful about is actually creating a huge smokescreen when it comes to reporting teachers, because the emergency license allows you to skip forward and proclaim that, yes, you do have teachers.
Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils, Class in Session. And you can always grab great podcasts like this one. Just search Busted Pencils on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And of course, you can always find us on the Civic Media website or at BustedPencils.com. Hey, and don't forget to find us throughout the week, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, with homerooms, class in sessions, and always loads of fun with Jacob's producer's choice. And listen up, pencil busters. You know you can always catch the Busted Pencils broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
To finish off the first hour of the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the Matt and Air on Air show with Greg Bach. Greg and producer Calvin introduce a long-lasting segment called This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Good day, good almost afternoon, good morning. It's mid-mornings on Civic Media. My name is Greg Bach. I'm your host, coming to you live from Radio Park here in Racine, along with my compatriot, my boards guy, the board lord, the man on the ones and twos, Mr. Calvin Butenhoff. We are here on Civic Media, here for you, having a great time, hoping you are having a great day, and I really appreciate you spending your time with us. After we're done, it's not over, folks. We're going to keep going after the 11 o'clock news. There's Tom Hartman from 11 to 2. There's John and Gordy in the afternoons from 2 to 5, and then from 5 to 6, or from 5 to 8, it's Pete Schwaba with Nightlight, who, by the way, I got to check my calendar here, Calvin, really quick here. Just going to check my social calendar. It's important to keep up with everything going on here. I will be on Nightlight myself this Friday at 5:35, so don't miss it, because when they have me on the show, as one person put it, I am definitely on the radio at that point. So Nightlight from 5 to 8 here on Civic Media. But stay close. We got a lot going on. Calvin, did you have a comment? Was there something you wanted to say?
Hey, I was going to say, don't miss Greg. Greg is going to be on Nightlight to discuss his favorite movie franchise, James Cameron's Avatar.
Absolutely. I'm a fan of all three of the available films, and I can only think about right now. I mean, like right now, I know I'm talking to you right now, Calvin, but all I'm thinking about is, what is part four going to do to further extend the story of these flying blue water creatures? I don't know. And how will it also then make $1 billion is beyond me. But that's for me to find out with Pete Schwaba this Friday on Friday, 5:30 on Nightlight. But yeah, we got lots of great programming ahead, and appreciate you sticking around, sharing your time, sharing your stories. Thanks to everyone who called and texted. Really, really appreciate it. Tomorrow, it's Wednesday already. We are halfway through the first full week of January. I don't know why. That's just how time works. But Mark Sommerhauser from the Wisconsin Policy Forum is going to be here, and we'll be talking about basically the state's budget and helping the listeners, myself, and the viewers. How does that impact the state's budget, impact the taxes, our taxes, the taxes we pay, the things that, you know, pay for the stuff, make the lights go on. But yeah, Mark Sommerhauser from the Wisconsin Policy Forum will be here at 10 o'clock. And we would love to have you part of the conversation. So yeah, Calvin, 2026, our show, what are you thinking so far? You liking it?
Yeah, we're rocking and rolling.
We are rocking and rolling. And that means if it's, you know, it's 10:55, it's the last portion of the show. We got to rock and roll right in the next segment called
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you ever have a thing that should not be, you can send it on to Calvin and me. And you can use, actually, the Jane Says email, janesays@civicmedia.us, janesays@civicmedia.us. Send us your tisbats. Send us your guest ideas. Send us your topics. We'd love to hear from you, but that is where you can find us for right now. That email still works, janesays@civicmedia.us. Today's article comes from the AFP. And then no byline today. It's just that's it. It's entitled "Wrong Crown Jewels: Streaker Bears All for Japan Emperor." Now, before we get going, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I have to confess that I don't know certain things, and I feel kind of like a dodo bird right now, Calvin. I didn't know that Japan still had an emperor. I thought that went away. So
I also, I mean, I guess I didn't know that they. I didn't know that they didn't have an emperor. And like, I guess I would assume it's kind of a similar to the royal family in England.
Yeah, in which we also mean no disrespect to the Japanese emperor if he is listening to the show right now. If he is, then awesome. Let us know your thoughts. Civic Media app, baby. You can. Are you in Tokyo? Where are you in Japan right now, sir? Emperor? I don't know how to. There's Mr. President. There's Prime Minister. Never referred to an emperor, but Emperor Naruhito was finished giving his 2026 greeting from a balcony at the Imperial Palace in Tokyo when a man in the front row in the gardens removed his clothes and climbed over a barrier, but was immediately restrained. The Tokyo police took him away in a blanket and led him away. The investigative sources told the broadcaster that the man in his 20s, who was not named, had announced on social media his intention to strip naked at the annual address. The event includes brief remarks, no briefs from this man. He was naked, and from the emperor, and who he waves to the crowd with the rest of the imperial family from the balcony. It sounds once again, like you said, Calvin, very much like the King of England. Like, you make an address, wave a little, and you go back inside, maybe have some tea. It says legend has it that the royals are descendant from the sun goddess Amaterasu, and can trace their lineage back thousands. Now I just feel like they're just giving a history of the emperor because that was it. The story is basically the guy announced to the world he was going to do it. He did it. And in much like just like what I equate to what can be Japanese efficiency, it happened. They covered him and they took him away. There's no status on the person who did it. It seems like it was dealt with. The family of the emperor, with the emperor is no political power under the post-war constitution, but remains hugely symbolic. So yeah, it's basically, you know, basically like the King of England or the royal family. So it's a nice little thing to do. It's decorative, if you will. Sorry, Mr. Naruhito, Emperor Naruhito. But yeah, that seems like a very interesting story to me. Just like, you're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go streak the emperor. And I did it. And I got taken away. And that's it. And that leads us to the end of another edition of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
As always, I want to thank Calvin. I want to thank Tucker. I want to thank traffic. I want to thank engineering. Without those individuals, I wouldn't be on the air right now. I'd be talking into a non-operational microphone. So without their help, I really appreciate them. And I wouldn't have anything to talk about that's interesting. So they're all making this show happen as they see fit. It is wonderful. And I appreciate them. I appreciate the callers, texters, listeners. Without you, there's no us. You can always be part of the conversation. And again, do not go anywhere. After the news break, we're going to have Tom Hartman from 11 to 2 and then great programming throughout the day. And we hope you join us tomorrow for a great discussion with the Wisconsin Policy Forum on how the state budget will impact your taxes. Other than that, have a great day. Take care. Have fun. Be safe. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Greg Box. Stay tuned, stay informed, and stay close.
Matt and Air on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 9 to 11. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.